primary point we tried to make yesterday was, and we tried to support this with a certain amount of history and so on, the idea that, welcome to the
Yeah, you can sit in front no matter what. If we're sitting in front, you're going to sit.
We tried to make the point yesterday that family, regardless of the shape that it may take, and family life takes different kinds of forms these days, but family or all kinds of families equal ecclesia, or is an authentic form of faith community. Okay, is a community of the baptized, okay, from a Christian perspective. And there's a lot of history and tradition behind this idea. It really is not just a novel idea that somebody came up with a few years ago. One of the things that I did not mention yesterday to support this idea is that saying of the risen Jesus towards the end of Matthew's Gospel there, where Jesus says, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Notice he did not say where 500 or 600 are gathered together in my name. It's a very minimalist statement, where two or three are gathered together in my name. And if a Christian family is anything, the ideal is that it is that, two or three at least, gathered together in his name. And that idea of two or three gathered together is essential, it's fundamental to any New Testament theology of the church, to any New Testament perspective on this idea of what is Christian community. It is at the very least two or three gathered together in his name. Okay. Anything else I want to say? We got into a little bit of some of the implications of that, and now we're going to begin to deal with that in some more detail today.
Yeah, I wonder if we should kind of go over the implications real quickly.
Okay.
That might be helpful.
The first implication of this idea is that a Christian family slant little church is a community. That is to say, they are people in relationship with one another. They are not simply a gathering of isolated individuals who happen to live in the same house. You know, we get this great American problem today where the home becomes a refueling station. People eat there and sleep there, and then they're gone, And you'd really never know that they're in relationship with one another if you just observed, if you sat across the street and watched, You'd never really, and even when they are there together, they tend to do things that are not relational, They turn on this box with a picture on it, when the sound comes on in the picture and they do this. They're not really relating to one another. Okay, so this obviously has some very practical implications to it, and we'll get into that. The second thing was...
It's a community of service.
Right, service, okay. If the family is, in fact, the basic form of faith community, the family is a community of service. That means, first of all, that they are there to serve one another. Okay, charity begins at home, that kind of idea. But it can't be turned in on itself. Okay, this family is there to love one another in order to empower one another in some way as a family to be of service to others outside the family. And that happens in a million different ways. Okay, third was...
Parental?
I'm blank here. Notice that service comes before prayer and ritual. That is because the first thing Jesus said to people, the first thing Jesus said was not pray. He said love one another. Reach out to one another, touch one another. So that the first thing we would have a family do is not necessarily to start praying together. Okay. That's good, but it has to happen in conjunction with this step here, or it often doesn't lead to a whole lot. Okay.
And we'll talk about prayer and ritual tomorrow. That'll
be right. This has there's a lot there to discuss. Okay. Fourth is.
Okay.
something like that. One, two, three, four, two more, I think. Okay, I'm going to put countercultural. This is the one we'll be dealing with today.
Which will have its implications for those others.
Right, and finally, evangelization. In effect, what we're saying here is that anything that we can say about the church at large, we need to be able to say about the family that is the basic unit of the church and is itself an authentic form of Christian community. Anything we say about one, we need to be able to say about the other.
And
in ways appropriate to families. We're not talking about adopting institutional modes of being here.
And the point we made yesterday, for those of you who were here will recall, is that it has to start in the family. It isn't that it happens in the local church and then it'll filter down to families. I don't think that's how it works. And again, just emphasize there are a variety of kinds of families, and single folks have a network that besides the families of origin, they have a network that functions very family-like in the sense that I mean family, a web of relationships, which is where I practice and need the realities of faith that are a part of my life. So it needs to happen first in that family, whatever kind of shape that family takes for me at this point in my life, and then the local church reality may make sense for me out of that. But it's a foundational church, as we called it yesterday. These implications, much of which we'll get into this week, but not completely, are in the Christian Families in the Real World, the book that of ours that's in the bookstore. Do you want to say a little bit about traits, too?
Okay. Shall I go into this in detail now?
Or just a little bit.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is another book we brought along that I really want to recommend very highly, and it's cheaper than ours. Dolores Kern's Traits of a Healthy Family. She did a study a few years ago to find out what is a healthy family. And anybody who might have seen this before knows that she came up with 15 characteristics or traits of healthy families. And I'll go into those in a little bit more detail later today. But it's just a wonderful, wonderful book, and it's only $4.95. You know, if you want to know what do we do to have a healthy family, it's right here. Pardon?
Dolores Curran.
Dolores Curran, C-U-R-R-A-N.
Is it in the bookstore here?
It is. Right on the table next to ours, that's right. Actually, we did that on purpose because ours goes into the more the religious implications of what is a healthy family. And Dolores touches on some of the religious dimensions, but hers is more of a, if ours is answers the question what, hers answers the question how. Okay.
She did it by surveying a bunch of professionals who work with families, and she sent out, how did that run?
She sent out 600 survey forms and got back 630.
Oh, great return rate, you know, your sociologist.
Somebody made copies hit it on the mark. Psychologists, scout leaders, pastors, teachers, medical people, you name it.
Our topic for today, the business of the in but not of the world, the countercultural reality of the family. What we want to really have a conversation about today is any Christian, community or individual, at any point in history, lives in a particular culture and society. And it seems to me that of its very nature, there is a conflict. I mean, we certainly see it in a very dramatic way with the persecuted early Christians, but at any point in history, there's always a rub, substantial or slight, between the Christian reality, the gospel message, and that ideal, and the reality in which that particular Christian or Christian community lives. And the trick is, at any point in history, because we're in the middle of a culture and society, it's real hard for us to put that at arm's length and take a look at it. I was talking with Walt Bowman earlier today, and we were talking about the opportunities to go to Europe and so on, and that helps, anytime you leave the country, it helps you get a little bit of sense of perspective on what you're living in the midst of. But but then it's, it seems to me only partial as well. What we want to talk about today, it seems to me, is what are the experiences for Christian families, and again, to keep that notion of the diversity of families, in the society in which we live today. What are the ways in which we are called to be in but not of the world in terms of the culture in which we live? And so we'll kind of be discussing this a little bit more later, but what I'd like to do is put you all to work right now. And I think we'll do this in small groups and then kind of report back together to make sure that we each have a chance to kind of share our ideas. Let's talk for about 10 minutes in groups. What are the ways in which our society today supports, that is, helps, and hinders Christian family values today? Okay? What are the ways in which the U.S. culture is a support to Christian and family values, and what are the ways in which it stands right in the way of trying to live a Christian family life today? Now, that, you know, begs the question of, well, what exactly is a Christian family life? But I think we have a fairly strong sense there. So what I'd like you to do in about four groups would be to generate a list of, here are the ways in which our culture helps a good quality Christian family life happen, and here are the ways in which it's just harder than anything to try and do that and do it well. Is that clear? Okay? Can we kind of chop ourselves in four parts and discuss that for a bit? So if someone would sort of record it, group, I'd appreciate it.
Plus, I'm now to hear people recording. You can turn it off for a minute now. Thank you.
Okay.
I hope.
How many do you want?
Just get with two or three people that you're near, or four, or whatever.
Can you figure out why we got these chairs in the village?
We're only ending up with three groups.
If you want to take my place.
Do you want to have, I'll go in your group when we do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the just that was mentioned. I think the joy.
I think the other countries are very active. We have a
culturally, like the first thing to mind, like, she was talking about was they were so rushed.
We don't really busy.
The social barriers are probably.
And I think that's why they don't have conversations.
As far as.
It's a resource.
There are.
It draws your heart to it, right?
Oh, yeah. Are you a Christian? Because I've talked to you so much, so many friends off of it.
And they're not put down, they're out and they're not put down. Still maintain the straight lines, even if you call some
it's supposed to be that way. My church is all
school. Oh.
By you?
So baseball is not discrimination. They expect large scale society against
this is the more implementational side education. The aspect of the other side too, because I was, every time I thought to, do some church stuff.
I just remember when I was one of them,
Well, we have control over it. I think it's a social norm to do that. Yeah, all the other families are doing little league or whatever it is too. So.
That's a real issue. they know your law, you know what is acceptable or not, and so it's a sure. How about a mess?
Okay, can we call you back together, please? Let's start with the helps for a minute, and we'll head the other direction. So let's go around the groups, and each group kind of give me one to start with, and we'll see how far we go in our list.
The concept of being founded on the freedom of religion.
Okay, so that freedom helps. Go ahead, say more if you want.
Oh, say more about that?
If you want, yeah.
Well, that's about freedom. That's the way it is. It's
okay, so that helps give permission for those values to be fostered in. Okay,
good. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Our the leisure time allowance that we have in our society.
Okay, so there's more leisure time than there used to be. You fill it up, Natalie, but there is more time. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
We talked that relates sort of to what we're does to. Generally, in this country, but if you looked at the whole picture, affluence in comparison to the rest of the world, mm-hmm. and that so, relates to ability to get and use resources and have the time to be with family,
okay.
not on a survival level of mm-hmm. most people of getting food for the day.
Mm-hmm. So there's more possibilities of things to do and be with each other. Okay, last group over here.
We marked legislative lobbying, like Gary Bauer and those from American Family Association, Don Wildman. Trying to keep family together through legal support, I guess you'd say.
Okay, so the ways in which the culture helps foster family values is really related in a way to the ability of the political system that we can put pressure to maintain those values is what I'm hearing. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Another in some ways related to that last idea that we are an opportunity for service for others culturally as well as in our churches and religious experience.
So we have more of an opportunity for service than in the past, perhaps?
That, why don't you speak?
Well, it's just a help in our society because people have the choice or the opportunity to go into their community and help serve other people even outside of the church just through volunteer work. And
the organizations.
The organizations are doing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so there's there's ways set up to help foster the value of being for others and serving others. Okay, great.
And along with the one above that is taxes. Our tax structure supports the church and supports the family and supporting the church.
Okay. There are ways in which the tax structure may support family values, but I think you perhaps find people would say, wait a minute, you know, what about the middle class that's trying, you know, to keep bread on the table and keep our family going? You know, there's some ways in which I think there's some questions about, you know, how equitable is that tax structure in some, for some families. Yeah. Okay.
The other one that we hit on was, I guess in some ways relates to affluence again, is that in this country there are a lot of resources available to help the family in need, to help parents if they are wanting to, especially spend more time focusing on family, agencies, through the churches, social activities, provided city parks.
Okay, all right. So there's some social agencies and other kinds of public resources that really are set up to help be a support that's there, yes, and that's really different. The flip side of this, and we haven't gotten to the hindering part of it, is that as we have a lot of social agencies and social resources, especially since perhaps the turn of the century or just before, that's taken away some of the autonomy from the family because, you know, there are times when a child might be removed from the home because it's not a helpful atmosphere and so on. You know, a closer look does show that that's probably for that child's benefit, but the flip side is, you know, that
whole
family, is disempowered in some ways. Next one, do you have a
We also, about school district policies of inviting family involvement, parental involvement in educational experience.
Okay, so that could be real related here to the social resources, that when the schools are sensitive to the parental role and the parental input and so on, that really offers the support. Any others from any of the groups at this point?
So many of them had a flip side, as you said. And when we added music to our list of hindrances, it was also added to the list of help. I guess there's such a wealth of music available today. It can hinder family life. The teenager is involved in the wrong way, but there's also some room to help.
Okay, I'm trying to think.
Would you like to say?
Yeah, I will. There's heavy metal bands that are religious groups. That are accountable to the ones that aren't. As well as a number of popular top 40 artists who do use religious overtones in their music. YouTube does
Okay. So that would be part of the popular culture that's really using popular media to advance Christian values, and maybe, you know, one of those intersect with family values. Okay?
I was just going to say that it's not even our church, but a church is very close to us. Our kids go to a kids choir that's wonderful, Kids of the Kingdom. And what is really heartening to, it's just wonderful to hear them singing just somewhere around the house or whatever, these songs, you know, and I know that others of us have had that happen, and it's just putting that in the brain and having it come out is great.
Okay, well, I'll also list that since it's come up here in terms of hindrances. Are there any other pluses that we want to add here before we move on? Those of you just joining us, what we're looking at are ways in which our culture and society today helps or hinders Christian values, just to kind of remind ourselves of what those are. How about in terms of hindrances, ways in which there's a definite pinch or crunch between our cultural values, our cultural qualities and norms and family life?
One we talked about was a cultural stereotyping of Christians, what a Christian is, that maybe make people reticent to proclaim their Christianity.
Can you say a little bit more about...
Go ahead, say more.
About how Christians stereotype?
While we were looking... Actually, what we were talking about was whenever people find out that... I know whenever I'm at work, whenever people find out that I'm a Christian and I go to church and I sing in the choir, and they go, you would never expect you to be a Christian. And then whenever I, that's just the way that it was with me. It's just that.
Because Christians are people who are stuffy and...
Yeah, and they're always walking around with the Bible telling you should go to church. Which they should, I think. Because that's what I... One of the things that I do is one of the ways that they found out about it. Because I go around and I try to make it a point every week to invite somebody to go to church. And so when I ran out of people around the neighborhood, I started at work. Because I knew that this was going to happen. So,
yeah.
So I think that that's one of the ways that they stereotype it.
Uh-huh. So it's a subtle but very real way in which we have entrenched there. Okay. Next group. What do you got on your list?
The stress on the individual rather than the family. The culture seems to promote the individual and their success.
Right. All kinds of ways. I gotta be me. We do it all for you. Yeah. And so... If I have to be all that I can be, that may come into conflict with some of these commitments I've made, and so then the question is, which wins that, right? Next
one. Well, I guess tying into that was the idea of lack of commitment. The mentality society has that
it feels good.
That whatever your values are, that's okay.
And there's the idea that there's
no values, set values, that anything goes. If you want to do this, if you want to live with this person, fine. This person wants to do something else, fine. A supporting sort of that same idea of anything goes, you do what you want to with your life.
Yeah. And if I outgrow this relationship, then that's just the way it is. Yeah.
I'm on my way.
Okay. How about for your convinces?
Some of them are repeated. Mm-hmm. One way was option overload.
Option overload. Too many choices.
Too many things to get involved in.
Good idea. Yeah, that's really true. That's a good way to put it. Option overload. Yeah. Too many possibilities. I have a friend who spent a couple years, I think, teaching English in China. She said that was the thing that really struck her when she came back to this country, was there are so many choices. And she said, it just felt real, disabling. She said, it was so much easier when I didn't have that many things to have to decide between.
Well, the example she gave, too, was being in the supermarket, and there is like 137 different kinds of breakfast cereals. It wasn't just that this was an option, but it was a stupid option. It was a stupid energy wasting choice to have to make.
Yeah, we had that same thing. We came back from 4 years overseas and checkbooks, We tried to open and check it out. She laid out 25 different kinds of checks.
Yeah. Now that
in other rooms besides music.
Okay.
Particularly television.
Okay. This we'll spend some time on in a little bit. It's a pretty powerful way in which the values system that makes up our culture today is pretty strongly disseminated. And it's easy to say, oh, it's that terrible, box in our living room or family room or whatever. That's a little oversimplified, but there are some ways in which it's a pretty powerful way to disseminate some values. Okay.
Our cultural measurements of success, along with that, the two parents working in the family trying to make quote ends meet, maybe it's expected in our culture, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I had a fun way, used to teach at Gonzaga University in Spokane, and used to teach Christian spirituality, among other things, and one of the things I would do the first day is bring a dollar bill, a measuring tape, and a calculator, and I told the students that basically in our society, if you can't measure it in one of those three ways, it's probably not important. So we need to know before we start this conversation that the things we're going to be talking about here are not considered important in our culture, basically. And I think there's a lot, you know, to say for that. So we want to be able to measure it and to figure out, is it bigger, is it better, and so on. Yeah.
I think affluence goes along with that, mm-hmm. under hinders.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We always want more, we need more, because everybody else has more.
That's right. And there is
and no, that's not always the best.
There's no such thing as enough. It's a pretty radical statement. I'm satisfied, I've got enough.
Our educational system.
Okay. Can you say more about that?
We talked about several ways. One was that, of course, the separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who wants to have Christian education as part of their child education has to go outside the public school system. Another one was that there are some of the activities issue, this mm-hmm. massive activities issue that mm-hmm. conflict mm-hmm. by sheer number, right. extracurricular we're talking about.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Do you have any more
cameras? That's kind of covered there.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Media noise, right, was one we spoke of. It's hustle, hustle, hustle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Decibels get high, and that's part of the psychology. I guess.
Right. So we could put down fast pace. That's really related here, too. Are there some others from the other groups that we can get to yet? Yeah.
We flipped around the freedom of religion concept, too.
Uh-huh.
And include all the cult activity mm-hmm. that's available and attractive.
Okay.
Can hinder, yeah. To tear apart family.
Yeah, oh yes. Yes.
What about competition? Peer?
Yeah, that's related here, but I think it's put it down. We take it for granted, and it is built in clearly to our educational system as well. That you need to be more, you need to be better. You need to be not just all that you can be, but better than. And it's real clear, you know, when you look at it from an outsider's perspective, how, you know, we don't do much in our educational system, though I think some places it's really being tried more. You know, can we as a group come up with a solution here and an idea and help each other rather than always being worried that the next person's going to best us. And it's so built into our athletic system and so on as well.
One thing we didn't discuss, but that I see on the help side that strikes me is the social resources.
Uh-huh.
I feel strongly that government has stepped in to where it places where the family and the church and et cetera really, in my perspective, belong.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, it's tended to remove that from the family or the church, etc., and then people just say it's government's responsibility. Tend to pass that off,
yeah.
More and more.
Yeah, I think that's true. We tend to be then passive consumers when it comes to setting our values, because there's some value setters out there that are pretty powerful, and unless we're really told and reinforced with the values that are maintained in this home, in this environment, are up to you to set. Then we kind of abdicate that role, or it's, you know, it's almost abdicated for us. I feel like putting it in the passive tense, because there's a way in which, you know, it's been established by outside sources. Any others for now? Thank you. It's an excellent list. Appreciate your help with that.
Okay, I'd like to begin my next section here by just reading a quick little line here from Romans chapter 12, verse 2. Paul says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that you may prove what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." that's an example from the Pauline literature of a strand of tradition that, that you can find really running throughout the entire New Testament. In the Gospel of John, it takes the form of in the high priestly prayer of Jesus, where he says, in effect, my disciples are to be in the world but not of the world. And we would interpret in meaning we are called to be in the world and for the world, to love the world and serve the world, but according to a different set of standards, a different way, of a different perspective that is formed and shaped by the gospel rather than some other set of standards or some other set of values that, that are available to us. Now, in a sense, what we're saying is that a Christian family is called to do this precisely as a family, to have this in but not of the world perspective. And this is going to be a struggle, obviously. But it's one I think we're beginning to realize is necessary and important, that it is not possible. Let me turn that around. There are going to be situations where being a good Christian and being a good citizen are not necessarily going to mean doing the same thing. Okay, you following me? That it is not necessarily always going to be possible to both embrace the scriptures and salute the flag at the same time. Now, I'm not advocating that would be unpatriotic or anything like that, but I am saying that I think that, that the gospel calls us to have that little bit of distance on our culture for the sake of that culture's own good. Okay? And what is our ultimate value? Let me just read another line here. This certainly relates to a lot of the things that came up here earlier. Actually, what I'd like to do is read the entire Sermon on the Mount and the entire of Luke chapter 6, because all you have to do is sit down and read those through once and then ask yourself, to what extent does this shape the culture, you know, that we belong to? And you begin to see that really that conflict is there, but what are we going to do about it? Things like, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Now, I'm not anti-insurance business, but the average insurance company is not, you know, real supportive of this attitude. Anybody in the insurance business here? I don't want to step on any toes. I think there is a place for, I mean, I love our medical insurance. You know, I think that's a necessary thing. But as a culture, we tend to worship this stuff. There is no such thing as enough insurance. You know, no one can serve two masters, for he will hate the one and love the other, or will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink. I spend my life being anxious about what am I going to wear and what am I going to eat and what am I going to drink. You know, it's a part of our culture. You know, sometimes I think that all I ever think about is money. You know, especially as a freelance writer. Somebody once described a freelance writer's life as being one of constant free fall. You know, so I'm always having to pedal fast, you know, to pay the grocery bill and things like this. We do this together, so it's not entirely on my shoulders. But anyway, I just am trying to illustrate this divergence that exists between the gospel and between the things that our culture tells us to do every day. Another example I would take from what happened to... Oh. This book I noticed also is over in the bookstore, although it's back on the shelves there. Following Christ in a Consumer Society by John Kavanagh. Excellent, excellent reading, but very dangerous to your sense of well-being. But I recommend it. The first section is entitled The Christian Marxist Matrix, and it's a critique of Marxism, and really you could skip that part because it's very abstruse and so on. And just read, you know, in the later sections. Anyway, he does a really wonderful job of illustrating what I'm talking about here, and I'd just like to read this if I could. Let's suppose that you are a married person with children. If you are relatively happy with your life, if you enjoy spending time with your children, playing with them and talking with them, if you like nature, if you enjoy sitting in your yard or on your front steps, if your sexual life is relatively happy, if you have a peaceful sense of who you are and are stabilized in your relationships, if you like to pray in solitude, if you like just talking to people, visiting them, spending time in conversation with them, if you enjoy living simply, if you sense no need to compete with your friends or neighbors, what good are you economically in terms of our system? You haven't spent a nickel yet. Okay. And would you let me read that again? Now, the question becomes then, what is the ultimate standard that we as a gospel people are called to strive to live according to? And everybody knows it already. Love of God and neighbor. In other words, relationships are what it's all about. Our relationship with God and our relationship with other people, especially the people that we live with on the most intimate basis every day. It's wonderful to be concerned about the problems that are not right next door to us, and it's important for us to do that. But at the same time, the most difficult enemy to love can often be the one that lives next door.
Lives at home.
I was going to get to that. You know, Jesus said we're supposed to love our enemies. Very often the spouse is the enemy that we are called to love right here and now. That two-year-old that is driving us bananas may be the enemy of the moment that we are called to love. You know, Jesus was not a pie-in-the-sky kind of guy, you know. He was talking about right here and now in this situation that we belong to. And so it's this relationship that is the ultimate standard in our lives. If the most important thing in my life is to be in a loving relationship with God and the people that I live and work with every day as my first priority, if those relationships are what are to matter most to me and are where I am supposed to give most of myself, then a lot of other things become a lot less important. And I become a countercultural person. Because we do not... How often... You know, every day of the week, do you hear the media telling us that love of God and neighbor is the purpose of life? And that your self-esteem comes from this, not the kind of deodorant you use, or the kind of car you drive, or, you know, the list is endless. Okay? We don't get, the only time we ever hear this, if we're lucky, is in church on Sunday.
I hear it on the radio.
Well, okay, if you listen to the right kind of radio stations, I suppose.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
And what strikes me, too, is when you look at a lot of the ads, whether they're for beer or for deodorant or for whatever, it's talking about relationships, and then, mm-hmm. By the way, at the end, is tuck in, you know, but you need this product. Because they know, those bad people on Madison Avenue, that what we really need and long for are relationships, and that's the hook. But then the hook becomes, you know, but you need this, you need to buy this, or have this.
The way you can have a lot of friends is to drink Budweiser.
Yeah.
Look at any beer ad, you know. What is it? They said 30-second ad for the Super Bowl. It's like $600,000 they pay for that. Don't tell me they don't, they do their studies. That stuff works, you know. We crave this intimacy, human intimacy. And the thing is, they short-circuit it. The culture short-circuits it by saying the way to get it is by owning stuff and accumulating lots of stuff and by consuming the right kinds of stuff, you know, rather than turning to those relationships directly. You know, look at the way the word family and the way the images of family life are used in advertising today. It used to be all we had was restaurants. Now there are family restaurants out there. You know, look at automobile advertising. It used to be you could buy a van. I've got a whole collection of slides. I didn't bring them with me. that illustrate this, you know, that a van, Chevy van, is advertised as, welcome to your new family room. You know, it's standard to line up families in front of station wagons for the car ads in the magazines and on television and so on. And just look at the way names on signs have been changing in the last 10, 20 years or so. You know, now there are no longer photography studios, there are family portrait studios. You know, no longer are there dentists, there are family dentists practices. What does a family dentist do that a regular dentist doesn't do? I don't understand. What, you come in and you all sit down in a chair together? You know, any dentists in the room? I don't mean to be a family.
One way that Kavanaugh talks about this, he has an interesting list at one point in the middle of this book where he talks about the commodity form of consciousness and the personal form of consciousness. And it's too long to read it all, but he talks about that. And the commodity form value is grounded in thinghood, marketability, you're worth what you do, not what you are, versus value grounded in personhood, just your intrinsic value. And one is a thing knowledge that you can observe and describe versus a personal knowledge. And he goes on to talk about behavior, that it has to do with violence and domination and manipulation, punishment and so on, versus a person behavior that's peacefulness, that's forgiving and healing, accepting weakness, respecting freedom and so on, sharing and giving. And he says it leads to a sexuality that's very machine-like. I mean, this is a connection that I hadn't made till I read this. Have you ever seen, there is a book called The Human Body and Owner's Manual. I mean, it's really bizarre. Versus sexuality is a sign of the person and the body seen as a temple. Non-commitment versus covenant. Replaceability versus uniqueness and so on. And he kind of lines these up and he says, ultimately, you're talking about death and life. You know, it's that Deuteronomy passage. You know, I set before you this day, death and life. Which do you choose? And what he argues in here is, Jesus is the revelation, the key point of what he calls his personal form of consciousness. So he says it runs right up against a society that says you are worth what you do and how you look and so on. And if you're not producing, you're not very valuable. If you're retired, if you're disabled, and on and on and on. So I think we've got a pretty significant clash. I mean, I don't think it's ever been easy to be a Christian in any society, as I argued earlier, but I think it's pretty darn significant now. We've been talking a lot. What do you think?
What you just said reminded me of John Bradshaw saying that we're now human doings. Mm-hmm. Instead of human beings,
right. And it's, and then it affects our relationships, because we don't know how to just be with one another. We have to do for or figure out, you know, how that works.
This puts a lot of weight, I think, on, especially on the shoulders of parents, because the implication we would suggest is that our goal is to try to establish in the context of our family relationships and in our homes precisely a countercultural environment. Now, what that's going to mean, I think, is going to be different for every family. But in essence, what it should mean, I think, is that when somebody from outside our family comes into our homes and spends any time with us at all, they would begin to sense a difference. To be Christian is to be different. That's another way of saying everything we've said so far. To be Christian is to be different. And if we aren't different, then maybe we're missing the boat here to one extent or another. There's an old saying, if it were against the law to be a Christian, would there be enough evidence to throw you in jail? You know, maybe you've heard that before. I think there needs to be a movement in that direction. It's a terribly difficult, terribly challenging thing, I think, for us to meditate on that, on the implications of all that. It means things like asking ourselves, in what way is my work, in fact, a way for me to go about loving God and neighbor? And I think there are lots of ways that that can be the case. I think there are very few situations, very few ways of making a living that cannot be that. I think there are probably some that can't. Like, I don't know, there must be some. But, Can anybody think of any?
As far as the job or the people there?
The job itself, the form of
somebody
work.
Standing on an assembly line or something.
Well, totally. I don't know. The thing is, the motive comes in there. If I'm working on that assembly line, it'd be out of love for my family, in order to be able to support them. Even though the work itself is dehumanizing, it nevertheless gives me the opportunity to exercise loving service to my family.
Producing a harmful chemical, working someplace that produces harmful chemicals,
or arms.
Yeah, I know there are people who have decided that they could not in good conscience work in arms manufacturing.
But then there are the others who do work in that industry who say, I'm trying to save the lives of my family and my children.
Yeah.
So they really believe that.
Yeah, and ultimately it comes down to a very personal choice. You can't really say to anybody what they should or should not do.
I'm real aware that we've kind of been, you know, focusing on the hindrance most of the time and kind of being, you know, bad news in a sense. What I'd like to spend our last few minutes doing is to look at some ways, well, yeah, that too, but before that, look at ways in which this does take shape in families that you may be a part of or that you know, because I think we're looking still for models of how do we live a more common cultural presence, and one that says, here at least these values prevail. One that strikes me, and I'd really ask you to be thinking as I'm talking about families that you know or that you're a part of and how you do these things, is that first element that I put over on this board now of community. How do we say, wait a minute, we need to really be intentional about spending some time with each other and really hanging out together so we know who each other are and really enjoy taking that time. You know, it really means putting ourselves on the calendar and carving out of the crazy schedule most of us get going for ourselves that feels like somebody else is doing to us, and really there's an argument to the fact that we do it to ourselves. To say, no, I'm sorry, I'm not available Wednesday evening. I've got something else on my calendar, in fact, what we have is, you know, that's the night we're going to spend together as a family. And we've done some experimenting with a regular family night, and it hasn't been every week exactly the same day, but about once a week. We just take some time and, you know, one of us on a rotating basis decides on a treat and some activity. You know, lately we've been going up to the park and having ice cream and playing tennis for a while together, wherever it is, or, you know, it can be some pretty crazy things at times. But we know that time is there because our kids are growing fast and they're going to be gone before long, and that time to be together is important. And I'm giving personal experiences not to say we are now the model couple and family. If you see our kids running around, you know that's not true. Just to give you some specific ideas and suggestions. Two other things about this time thing for us. Since our oldest was born, he's 12 now, Mitch has been real strong on, and I've really appreciated too, that we've gone out one night a week, the two of us, and said, yes, time with our family is important, but our relationship really needs a priority here so that we have something strong going on. And so that is a hassle a lot of the time to find a sitter and, you know, figure out what we're up to and so on, but it really keeps us, you know, talking to one another. And then another thing, and it sounds like, you know, it's a real scheduled thing, it isn't as hairy as it sounds, but one thing we discovered too with three kids, three boys, is that we wanted to make sure there was one-to-one time built into there so they weren't kind of lost in the crowd. And so we try to have special time about once a week on a rotating basis where one of us takes time with one of them, and for a couple, 3 hours we go and do whatever they'd like to do. And we try and keep it low budget, which has become the challenge as they get a little older. It used to be when they were little, we could go downtown and ride the escalators, and that was great fun, you know. Those days are long gone. But anyway, just to do something that's their priority and just spend time with each other, to say to these guys, you know, hey, being with you is real important in our lives. And I mentioned yesterday in our session that, you know, we get hassles on a regular basis about how come we don't have all these things that other people do have in their homes. And we've talked about why we've chosen the kinds of jobs that we have that don't pay as much, but that we want to do things that we believe in and that are real important. What are some ways in which that takes shape for you or other families that you know? Ways in which these sets of values are coming down?
I think even as often as I think TV can be a hindrance, I think that we have on occasion gotten a video and sat and watched it as a family and discussed it afterwards. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a video that we weren't sure we wanted the kids to really see, but they really wanted to see, we watched first and then sat and watched it with them or let them watch it and then discuss it. Mm-hmm. So we've used it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I know a family in our town too who uses the television, something like that. They like football, for instance, but they do it as a family and they'll have their pizza and stuff and they'll sit and do their games and stuff while they watch the football game or whatever it may be like that. Uh-huh. But it's their family time and they're not just staring at the television.
Yeah.
You know, they're making a party out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Is this about television too? Or?
No, this is, we have two teenage daughters.
Uh-huh.
So telephone and friends are hindrances
to
family time because they don't want to be with us. And yet when we got in the car, we live in Southern California, when we got in the car to come up here, we realized that we really are a real family and we really like each other.
Yeah.
And oftentimes at home, I will take one of my daughters in the car and we'll just drive. I hate to use the gas to do that, but it's the only way to get away from the telephone and friends and the TV and to just drive. And we talk. And so.
Those are precious times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they're getting more rare.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. There was something I was going to say in my conversation about. I heard the statistic, maybe you're aware of this, that the family meal, which we'll talk more about tomorrow, that at dinner time, in 50% at least of the American homes, the television is on.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's not much being together going on there, even if we are all at the same table together because we're...
I was going to say, in relation to that, to hear my kids talk, we're real oddballs that we have family meals together. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might be 50% of the homes, families don't even eat
them together. That's right, that's right. Yeah.
I chose not to work when we were raising our children, and that sometimes was difficult because there seemed to be a big thing going on in the media that was saying, if you don't work, you're not a whole person.
Yeah.
And I really struggled with that. You know, we had one car, my husband took it, so it was...
And staying home is working as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, but at that time, it was
right.
It was really considered not a job.
Yeah. I think we've just begun this conversation. One of the things that I think is really important in our lives as far as trying to live a different set of values is having the support of other couples and families who are trying to live similar values. So that when our kids say, that's it, we can say, well, the so-and-so that they know, you know? So we're not the only strangers. But there's so much more that we could talk about here, and maybe we ended up spending a little bit too much time on the problems and not enough on the possibilities here. But I hope we can continue the discussion over dinner or whatever to really talk about what are some ways in which we live a different set of values. There is a lot in our book about this, and also in Dolores' book that we mentioned earlier that we'll try and talk more about later in the week. But our time is up, so thank you very much.